supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Blair's Lerner College of Business and Economics supports WHYY, offering drop-in information sessions this coming Wednesday from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Newark campus, minutes from exit 1B on I-95. Staff will be available to speak one-on-one with working professionals interested in an AACSB internationally accredited part-time MBA or an accelerated EMBA program. More at 302-831-2221 or mba.udel.edu.
Hello, I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Thanks for joining us for our debut show. We'll be here at this time every weeknight, sharing stories, interviews, and analysis from WHYY news staff and our growing network of journalism partners. Their reports will zero in on what's new, what's important, what's fascinating, and what's funny about our region. Like our new website, newsworks.org, we're eager to hear what you think, so thanks for tuning in and send us your feedback. We're on Facebook as Newsworks Tonight, on Twitter as @NWTonight, and on the web at newsworks.org. Now let's get started. We're opening our first ever show with a topic guaranteed to knock your socks off: the debt ceiling. Not convinced? Let WHYY's Susan Phillips try to persuade you.
The federal government spends more than it makes, so it has to borrow to pay its bills. The nation's debt ceiling is now set at $14.3 trillion. Since World War I, Congress has always voted to increase it. Jack Lew, director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, says defaulting on the debt would be a disaster.
I think that at a minimum, you'd see interest rates in the United States go up. You'd see the cost of paying for mortgages go up. You'd see the cost of paying for student loans go up. You'd see it not just limited to the financing of the government. It would spread through our economy.
But Republicans don't want to give something for nothing. In Philadelphia today, U.S. Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania says the mounting deficit is the real danger.
If you just raise the debt limit without any reforms, that's the bigger danger for the market. And none of us knows exactly when we'll have to pay that price. Just like the Greeks didn't know, you know, 6 months prior to their debacle that they were staring it in the face.
Toomey has proposed his own budget that includes large spending cuts. He says the government will never actually default on any debt obligations and calls Lew's comments on the debt ceiling fear-mongering. Gus Fauché of Moody's Analytics says debt ceiling arguments are nothing new.
This has been more intense than it usually is, but usually there's a debate about it, and usually what it is the members of the opposition to the president's party try to embarrass the president, and the president argues for a clean increase in the debt ceiling.
President Obama voted against raising the debt ceiling while he was a senator, and now calls that a mistake. The Treasury Department says the country will be able to cover its bills until August. I'm Susan Phillips, WHYY News.
Let's take a spin through today's headlines. Some 250 nurses and workers who staff traveling blood drives in the region are threatening to strike next week. Talks are continuing to prevent the first work stoppage since 1997. And the Red Cross says that even if workers do strike, the blood supply to area hospitals will not be disrupted. A judge is expected to approve revised documents outlining the Catholic Diocese of Wilmington's bankruptcy case. A $77 million settlement will go to nearly 150 alleged victims of priest sex abuse. The settlement will release the diocese and its parishes from legal claims by those plaintiffs. In return, the diocese would provide access to documents detailing how church officials handled pedophile clerics. And Oscar-winning actor Denzel Washington confessed to a bit of stage fright today as commencement speaker for some 5,000 University of Pennsylvania graduates. The star of Malcolm X in Philadelphia made it a teachable moment, encouraging grads to have the guts to fail, noting, "If you don't fail, you're not even trying." Here's a good bet. Walk down a Philly street with a .40 caliber Glock bouncing in plain view on your hip, and you're going to catch the attention of police. Mark Fiorino did that, and his encounter with a Philadelphia cop got kind of testy. Fiorino caught the episode on tape and then posted it online. WHYY's Elizabeth Fiedler reports.
Mark Fiorino was walking along Frankfort Avenue, wearing his weapon, when a police officer stopped him. Fiorino used a recorder to document the heated confrontation that ensued, including his offer to show his firearms license.
Got a gun right on this left side.
Sir, I am no...
F-
excuse me.
Get
I'll get on the ground.
You threatening me with a taser?
Put your hand right up.
All right.
Fiorino says he keeps his firearms license in his shirt pocket so it's easily accessible. He says he was terrified.
To see that I was being threatened with deadly force, he was threatening to kill me because I was exercising my rights as a citizen and obeying the law, that's a little traumatizing.
Police spokesman Lieutenant Ray Evers says the language used in the incident is not acceptable. Internal Affairs is investigating. Since the incident, he says the department has made sure officers know the law. I'm Elizabeth Fiedler, WHYY News.
Philadelphia City Council is getting a facelift this year. Tomorrow, Pennsylvania voters just get to decide who the candidates are. Joining me now to preview the primary election is WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. And Dave, of one thing we can be sure, there will be at least five new faces on the 17-member city council.
Right. It's the biggest turnover that we have seen in council in 20 years. Five members are retiring, and at least one other seat is competitive, and there's always the chance for an outsider to sneak in around the edges. So, yeah, we will definitely see some new faces.
And with that, should we expect a whole new direction in city council, or more of the same, something in between?
You never know until the new members are seated and kind of show what they have. But it's interesting when you look at the people who seem to be the leading contenders for the competitive races right now. They tend to be well-stocked with people who are from the traditional sources of our political leaders. We have a state representative. We have ward leaders. We have present and former staff members of city councils. We have a union official. There are some folks who are outsiders who have something of a shot, but it does appear as if we're going to get sort of this crop of people from at least the same sources that we usually draw our elected officials.
Nobody too mavericky.
Well, none of them that are leading. Now, there are some that do have a shot. In the first district, which is South Philadelphia and Center City, you have Jeff Hornstein, who's a union organizer, not a guy who's run for office before. Joe Grace, who was a gun control activist, has something of a shot. The guy who's gotten the party endorsement there is a committeeman, Mark Squilla. In the council at large field, you have some folks like Andy Toy, who's never held public office before, has managed to build up a bit ahead of steam. So he has at least some kind of a shot. But again, as I say, mostly we're going to see people drawn from the traditional sources of political leaders.
It's often useful to follow the money. Who are those with deep pockets backing?
The biggest story as you look at the campaign finance reporting is the remarkable role being played by the Electricians Union Local 98. They've been a big player in city politics for a long time. Their political director, Bobby Heenan, who is running for one of the competitive seats, has amassed $624,000. It is an unprecedented sum for a city council race. But the union isn't just interested in that contest. They are backing at least five candidates to the tune of $10,000, and probably a lot more when you consider contributions they've made through other political committees. So that union and its leader, John Dougherty, could be very influential in the next city council.
Well, Dave, are there any Tom Knox-esque self-made candidates this time around?
There is one, Dave, and this is unprecedented in a council race. Howard Treatman, the political newcomer from Germantown, is now over $250,000 into the campaign, which doubles the contribution limits for everybody running against him. They can now accept double. He just exceeded that limit as the race ends, so it's effectively too late for anybody to really do anything with it.
For Philadelphia voters going to the polls, what are other races of interest?
Well, I'm kind of interested in two offices that generally get almost no attention, sheriff and city commissioner. The sheriff's office has been under great scrutiny because of misspending and financial scandals in the past sheriffs. And one of the gentlemen running there, John Cromer, a former city housing director, wants to abolish it as an elected office. It'll be interesting to see if he gets anywhere. The likely winner, most people believe, is Jewel Williams, a state representative and ward leader. Then there's the city commissioners. Marge Tartaglione has commanded the heights of that office for nearly 30 years. She's had a bit of a rough time. Her daughter was forced to resign after an ethics investigation, and a self-styled reformer named Stephanie Singer, a math professor who has developed her own website with campaign results, is waging a spirited challenge. She doesn't have the kind of traditional organizational support that Marge Tartaglione has had. It'll be interesting to see whether she's able to make a run.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
And listeners, when the polls close, stay with WHYY-FM Tuesday night for more analysis from WHYY's Dave Davies.
NewsWorks Tonight Weather is supported by the Executive MBA program at the University of Delaware, now accepting applications for the fall cohort. More at 302-831-2221 or emba.udel.edu.
Cloudy skies, 65 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:16 for tonight. A chance of scattered thunderstorms, low 60 degrees. And then a flood watch in effect tomorrow morning right through Wednesday night. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms possible, high 65 degrees. Periods of rain Wednesday, high 71. Perhaps a leftover shower into Thursday morning, remaining cloudy, high 75 degrees. And Friday, cloudy with a chance of storms, high 74. Coming up, the Philadelphia Orchestra's bankruptcy fiasco.
It takes the same amount of skilled musician labor to perform a Mozart string quartet as it did in Mozart's time.
WHYY's Peter Crimmins breaks down the labor economics behind the orchestra's latest woes. Stay with NewsWorks tonight. We'll be back after this break.
The Wistar Institute is proud to support WHYY-FM. I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a world leader in biomedical research right here in Philadelphia. It's National Cancer Research Month, and at Wistar, we are finding new ways to prevent cancer with vaccines, detect it early through simple blood tests that look for genetic markers, and design better drugs to target cancer at the molecular level. The Wistar Institute, today's discoveries, tomorrow's cures, online at wistar.org.
Benchmark School supports WHYY, providing bright, struggling readers with the skills to become strategic thinkers, learners, and problem solvers. Benchmark also offers a summer day camp for children who can benefit from reading and writing instruction beyond the regular school year, as well as enjoy the fun of a recreational camp experience. Details for both fall enrollment and the 2011 summer camp will be available at Benchmark's open house Thursday, May 26th. Details at benchmarkschool.org.
Getting voters to go to the polls, come rain or shine, especially rain. I'm Joanne Allen. Tuesday is primary election day on Morning Edition, and WHYY's Elizabeth Fiedler reports campaigns changed their strategies to counter bad weather that could cause some voters to stay home. Join us for that story on Morning Edition from 6 till 9 on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The Philadelphia Orchestra Association is broke. It's not the first orchestra to declare bankruptcy, but it is the first top-tier American one to do so. Though many ask, how could this happen? In fact, one thinker predicted problems more than four decades ago. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports.
William Baumol is an economist of some repute. In the 1960s, he used orchestras to describe why some sectors of the economy have costs that rise faster than inflation. It's called Baumol's cost disease. Professor Roger McCain at Drexel University says that principle explains why laborers in some industries can never get more productive.
It takes the same amount of skilled musician labor to perform a Mozart string quartet as it did in Mozart's time.
Baumol's cost disease shows why labor costs in some industries like performing arts, healthcare, and education are driven by wages in other sectors, for example, manufacturing.
Reload bags? Good morning.
That is Roland Burns. He's the co-owner of Reload. It's a company that makes bike messenger bags. He and his five employees work on industrial sewing machines in a Second Street storefront. 13 years ago, he was a bike messenger, making bags in his spare time out of his apartment.
When we started, we had what was called a semi-industrial machine, which was pretty much a metal home machine. These machines cut like 30% as far as time. Getting the right scissors and better cutting tables and better workstations, all that contributed into cutting down the time that it took to actually make something.
As he bought better equipment, Burns' stitchers were able to turn out more bags, and their wages reflected that. Now, compare that to orchestra musicians, who cannot perform Mozart any more quickly without ruining it. Nevertheless, their wages must increase to keep up with other industries that become progressively more efficient. Here's Professor McCain again.
As labor productivity is increasing in other sectors, they're going to be able to offer wages to people who might otherwise go to the music conservatories and become professional musicians. And instead, those people are going to choose to go design bike bags or some other equally aesthetically interesting activity.
After a few years, Roland Burns wanted to expand his company, so he moved the operation from the Second Street storefront to a warehouse in North Chinatown. At its height, Reload employed 18 people in two cities. But it didn't work out.
We kind of gave a shot at seeing what would happen if we were really able to make a ton of stuff. And we were making a lot more, but our bottom line wasn't really changing that much. And my job turned into pretty much purely administrative, which didn't really make me that happy.
So Burns shrank his company down to just 5 employees and moved back to that little storefront on 2nd Street. Now let's compare that to an orchestra. The Columbus Symphony in Ohio is struggling for survival, but it cannot reduce its number of musicians, so instead it cut musicians' pay by 25%. Now that risks driving talent away from music and into more stable economic sectors. Of course, it's not just economics that motivate musicians. There are also artistic and cultural considerations, but those are also precarious. Greg Sandow is the author of the forthcoming book, Rebirth, The Future of Classical Music.
There is a myth that the audience for classical music has always been old, and that is just absolutely not true.
Sandow says classical music is receding from contemporary culture.
If you go back to the 60s or before, they uniformly show an audience with a median age in its 30s. It's really the people who got into it decades ago when it was common for younger people to get into it who remain the core of the audience today.
Sandow says a typical orchestra budget from the 1960s spent virtually nothing on marketing because the music pretty much sold itself. Not anymore, says Philadelphia Orchestra President Allison Volgamore.
What our new plan calls for is to experiment more with marketing. We actually have not marketed our concerts very well and not spent sufficient money on marketing.
The nuts and bolts of saving this orchestra now do not involve overarching economic theories, but rather things like marketing budgets, rent, musician pensions, and payments to the Philly Pops. If and when the orchestra pulls through bankruptcy and the economy improves, classical music will still have to contend with that pesky Baumol's cost disease. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Take out your level and notice that our Milky Way lies nearly parallel to the horizon this month. Let's get galactic on Sky Talk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. What part of the neighborhood do we reside in?
Oh, we reside in the outer edges of the neighborhood. You could say in a way that if we consider the center of the galaxy to be Center City, then we might be found out in the edges of the outer suburbs.
And based on 2010 census figures, how large a neighborhood is it?
Our galaxy is about 100,000 light years across. And of course, that means that it takes light 100,000 years to travel from one edge over to the other edge. The galaxy is about 33,000 light years thick, and we're about 2/3 of the way out. So we are way out there. Now, what's the population? Well, if we tried to count all the stars, we'd find that we're somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 300 billion stars.
Can our sun claim it's a native Milky Wayian, or is it an immigrant to this galaxy?
Yeah, that's a great question. It actually is a native Milky Wayian. It belongs here with all the other members. Most of the stars that we see are original stars of this galaxy, but there are stars that are not really original members of the galaxy. And so you might wonder, if they aren't original, so where do they come from? You have to consider that galaxies have various interesting behaviors, and one of those interesting behaviors is that galaxies can collide or merge. And you might even consider that galaxies do something else which is strange, and that is that they cannibalize other galaxies.
Darwin was right.
Darwin was right. where the larger galaxy absorbs all of the stars and material of the smaller galaxy, and that merger doesn't really affect the larger galaxy structure in any particular way, except that it takes on more stars and more mass.
Is it typically every galaxy for his or herself, or do they ever travel in pairs or packs?
Well, they actually all travel in clusters of some kind or another. It's rare that you find a galaxy off by itself. Our galaxy, for example, belongs to what's called the local group. And up until very recently, it was thought that the local group consisted of some 20 to 25 members. We've more recently discovered that our local group contains even more than that, nearly twice as many members.
So we're located in the exurbs, or the rural part of our Milky Way. Do we have enough sense then of the shape of the universe to know what part of it we occupy?
No, we don't. This is one of the great questions to be answered about the structure of the universe, and that is, where would we imagine the origination point of the universe would be?
Stars are born and then die. Is that the same fate for galaxies as well? Or do all galaxies date back to the original bang?
It's the question of which came first, the chicken or the egg. When you look at galaxies, would a galaxy have formed first? And what would it have formed from in order for there to be stars? If there were stars that came first, how would they then collect themselves into galaxies? And then how did so many galaxies multiply out of what was the beginning of the universe?
Does astronomy feel it's any closer to an answer than it was 10 years ago, a century ago, or this is one of the big riddles?
I think astronomers are very much closer than they were 10 years ago. Are they close to an answer? No. But we're much closer, only because we've been able to observe more, understand more, define more. But that only then asks more questions and carries us in the direction of an answer, perhaps. But it's not going to happen next year.
Let's revisit the topic again next week. Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk. Even if you missed the Republican presidential debate, you may still be able to catch this epic matchup if it happens. Seems the Cherry Hill teen has challenged Minnesota Representative Michelle Bachmann to a war of words. Bachmann's Tea Party-backed conservative politics have propelled her into the spotlight as a potential GOP presidential candidate. And in an open letter to Bachmann, 10th grader Amy Myers wrote, quote, "I've found quite a few of your statements to be factually incorrect, inaccurately applied, or grossly distorted," end quote. Myers is challenging Bachmann to a public debate and or fact test on the Constitution. Bachmann has not responded to Myers' request. That's it for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Stephanie Marudas. You can follow us anytime at newsworks.org. Also, check out our Twitter feed at NWTonight. We're on Facebook, of course, at facebook.com/NewsWorksTonight. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. Since 1918, the Philadelphia Foundation has strengthened children and families. The Foundation supports nonprofit organizations that enhance parenting, mentor youth, create safe environments, advance individual education, and advocate for children and families. The Foundation can help you make a difference for such southeastern Pennsylvania nonprofits today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or fellowfound.org.
Eastern State Penitentiary Historic Site supports WHYY. The 2011 season features 10 innovative artist installations, including Release by filmmaker Bill Morrison, jazz composer Vijay Iyer, and curated by Julie Courtney, depicting Al Capone's release from ESP. Visitors can also experience the new hands-on history interactive activities and the Voices of Eastern State audio tour narrated by actor Steve Buscemi. Open 7 days a week and Friday nights all summer. www.easternstate.org.